Hello everyone, before we crack on with the extra time end of year special, we need to give a quick shout out to our sponsor this week, which comes in from our favourite fantasy football platform, FanTeam. I'll be honest, I am pretty awful at fantasy football. I'm sure many of you out there sympathise with me when I say I've neglected my team since about game week 6. Just had a look, it's absolutely shocking. I've got Trincao and Danny Ings doing nothing, Kanate at centre-half hardly appearing at all, I'm bottom of every league I appear to be involved in, and yeah, it's just a bit embarrassing. I'm even below Zach in the Football Daily one. That's how bad it's got so far. Fortunately, for players like myself, and I'm sure many of you out there, FanTeam have the perfect solution to get back into fantasy football. So they've launched their £100,000 Premier League second chance season game, where you can basically just hit the refresh button and get going again for the second half of the season. You all know how fantasy football works, but what's exciting about FanTeam is that it's free to enter for all new and existing users on the platform already. If you want to enter multiple teams beyond then, it's £10 a ticket, and you've got until the 14th of January to build your team and get going. And there are some serious prizes up for grabs. £20,000 for whoever comes in first place. Top five will receive a minimum of £1,000 each. Even £3,000 to £4,000 get at least £5. That's probably where I'm looking to end up. I've just had a look at building my attack. I've gone for Diogo Jota and Lacazette up front. £7.7 million each. Not the most expensive forwards on the game, but I just reckon with Aubameyang out in the cold, and with the AFCON coming in, those two are going to bang in 2022, along with Eberiche Eze. He's only got 2 points on the game so far, but only £6 million. Back from injury, he is my shout, although my shouts have been pretty awful this season. If this sounds like your kind of fun, you can enter the £100,000 second chance game with our link below. That's fanteam.co/footballdaily. Check it out in the description below. Obviously, terms and conditions apply. You have to be 18 plus. To enter, for full details, check out the description too. We had a lot of fun with FanTeam during the Euros, and they're one of the partners of Fulham, so what more can you want? Powering Marco Silva's boys back to the Premier League, where we belong, probably for one season, then we'll go back down again. Let's wait and see. If you want to enter FanTeam's £100,000 second chance Premier League game, follow the link at fanteam.co/footballdaily, and let's crack on with the podcast.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by Henry Hill. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Pat. Yeah, good to be back with you.
It's good to have you here. And Zach Jelleb?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Sadly, not related to Harry Hill, though, which is a big shame, isn't it, Henry?
Not really. People often go down like the Prince Harry route, whatever, but they do forget that if you... Harry is technically short for Henry, so by all means, I am Harry Hill, which is
wow.
I don't know how I feel too much about that as a process, but it's not something I'd go shouting about. But I don't know if he's even relevant anymore. I don't know if he's even knocking around. So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully,
I was a doctor.
Hopefully, I can take over. But yeah, no, this is. I don't know about you boys, but it feels like the world has stopped again. Like after sort of a fairly semi-normal 9 months. I feel like the world is...
I refuse to believe that. Get through December, back into January, and the world is our oyster again. I'm going to try and go on holiday this year, or 2022. But I'm going to attempt to.
Aren't you owed 6 months worth of holiday at this point, Zach?
Oh, I've still got like 30 days of holiday to take or something like that. I just don't take them. I need to, but I just need to like do something. I've just got a sad life.
What I love about you, Zach, is A, that is true, you do have a sad life. B, you used to declare that you'd never been on holiday, you didn't see the point of holidaying, and it wasn't for you at all. And then you went on that one trip with Chelsea to Porto, and we're like, oh, travelling's the greatest thing I've ever done.
It was a great trip, mate.
Who's the Scottish bloke who does the Chelsea?
Pat Nevin, mate. Pat Nevin introduced me to red wine, steak, pork. It was game-changing.
I'm glad it took Pat Nevin to be a tour guide for you to get fall in love with the wider world. Okay,
that's what it took for you to realise that going on holiday is better than sitting at home and watching Friends.
It's not that. It was just, I don't know. Like There's more to it. But we could be here all day, to be quite honest. Like, I just felt like, I don't know. I always felt like later on, like that, I could do that all later on. And like for now, I could just, you know, crack, like get things done. But the world stops.
I couldn't disagree more. So. Zach, yeah, now you're a reborn culture vulture, Zach. What's on the hit list for next year?
Where are you off to next year? Is it gonna be Dubai? Is it gonna be Tenerife? One of the other cultural hotspots favoured by everybody at Football Daily?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, I'd like to maybe go to Spain. I'd like to spend a bit more time in Italy. I really enjoyed Italy when I went there for like 24 hours. Milan, Rome were really nice.
You went to Rome and didn't you text me because you were like, I'm having an Aperol spritz?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't actually enjoy it in Rome. It was too bitter. But then in England, I really enjoy them. Maybe my taste buds would have changed by now.
Zach, you're more sophisticated.
Zach, you're like you're like a mix between Copper 90s Derby days and An Idiot Abroad. That's what you are.
Wow. Back in the day, we used to pitch Bab and Jalab. Bab and Jalab, mate, would have been a series that would have happened.
That would have been absolutely amazing. I mean, to be honest, Joe also is a strong contender for like worst traveller because he went to Paris once for like a day and a half with Chloe. He had a croissant. He said it was salty and he didn't enjoy it. He was just like, yeah, I'd just rather get one from the supermarket back here. And I was like, did you find the only bad croissant in Paris? Like, I don't know how it's possible.
He also hated the metro as well.
I mean,
hated the metro.
Look, fair's fair. The Paris metro is disgusting.
Yeah, it's
like
gross.
The Paris metro is literally like 100% human shit. It's horrible.
I've watched a bloke take a shit on the platform in Paris.
Oh my god.
That's a very common experience in Paris.
Wow.
I quite enjoy Paris. Don't say too much, otherwise Zach will be put off forever and you'll you know.
No, it's fine.
No, we'll see. 2022, I'll be travelling, boys. I'll be travelling.
Yeah.
Alright.
Maybe.
Cool.
We'll see.
Zach just like just little Delta variant hotspots springing up all over the world wherever Zach lands. Well, should we talk first about 2021? We're getting ahead of ourselves with 2022 here because we've decided that on today's podcast, we are going to do the Extra Time Alternative Awards 2021, okay? Mm-hmm. So we're not going to do the Best Player of the Year. We are going to do something a bit like that. We're not going to do, I don't know, what other stuff do they do? The Best Striker of the Year? That's the thing they made up for Lewandowski. Yeah, we're not going to do any of that bullshit today. We're going to talk about stuff that interests us, okay? So, first category, and I think this makes it more difficult, right, when you have to take it over the calendar year rather than just, like, the season. But we're going to start with a simple one, which is Breakout Star of 2021. Who would like to kick us off with their Breakout Star of 2021? Because I think, actually, it feels like with every passing year, football gets a bit younger and there are more and more, like, young superstars breaking through at the highest level.
Good God. I mean, I have a shout. I think Bellingham. I think Jude Bellingham really this year took it to another level. Obviously, he joined Dortmund in 2020 in the summer. But throughout 2021, obviously going to the Euros with England, but playing in the Champions League against teams like Manchester City and leaving that pitch probably one of the better players and maybe even the best player on that pitch for that game. Just speaks wonders. And he was 17 years old. Like, you are right. Football does seem to be getting younger and younger now with the way players are coming through. And obviously Jude Bellingham is just a ridiculous talent to the way he's playing already. But then you went and saw him play again this season. And he continues to be like the linchpin kind of that Dortmund side. Haaland was out for a long time. And Bellingham kind of stepped up and took it to that next level. Obviously he played with Jadon Sancho last year as well. And he was still impressing. Like, he has a future like none other, I think, to be quite honest. He's obviously going to maybe... He has the potential to be a Ballon d'Or winner. But at 18, and you're already kind of being considered maybe the midfielder that everyone needs to be buying in the summer upcoming. Probably won't leave in the summer upcoming, but the season after, in 2023, when he'll only be 20 and having played for Dortmund for nearly 4 years. That is ridiculous. Is just speaks volumes. He was obviously doing it for Birmingham City when he was 16, and we all kind of laughed at Birmingham City retiring the number 22 shirt. And then he's had a year where he's kind of proven actually it might have been a good decision to retire it because he's quite frankly a ridiculous talent.
No, it's not a good decision. Like, Zach, let's have it right. Like, he would have had to win like the Champions League with Birmingham for them to retire that shirt. That's nuts.
I mean, to it, I sure, but I mean, give it a few years, and he could have won England the World Cup in the
yeah, but he didn't win the World Cup when he was at Birmingham. Like,
I get your point.
It's not like, you know, Jude Bellingham played here once upon a time. They're not doing it like that. He left there when he was like 17, and they were like, "We're going to retire his shirt." To be fair, he was wearing the number 22, so they probably didn't care that much.
This is it. If he's wearing number 8, they wouldn't have retired it. But because it's 22, yeah, exactly. They're like, no one else is going to be wearing this number anyway. We might as well give him some sentiment.
I've not met a single Birmingham fan that has like greeted that decision with pure joy.
Of course. Well, like, Will Brazier. Yeah.
Everyone's a bit like, oh, that's a bit weird. But sure, why not? That is the general reaction to that move. But yeah, I mean, listen, I don't think he's going to be a Ballon d'Or winner. I think someone in his position... I think someone in his position, it's really hard to get anywhere near it. I think Mason Mount did incredibly well to come, 18th, whether he did in that position. I think either you've got to be some... it's a striker's game, isn't it? Let's face it, the Ballon d'Or.
Sure, okay.
But yeah, I agree with you on Jude Bellingham. I mean, as like the Continental Club representative, obviously Florian Wirtz has come on strong this year. He's looked really good. They kind of slowed down a little bit. With Bayer Leverkusen and all that, I think, you know, they've got a really cool squad at the moment. But Dusan Vlahovic, I banged on about this on Sunday Vibes the other day. For 2021 alone, this guy's had a ridiculous season: 37 goals and assists and 41 league appearances. Everyone thought it might be a bit of a fluke coming up to 2021. Because bear in mind, the start of last season, he was hardly scoring at all, and he's just turned it on in a way which is quite remarkable. And even since I was last speaking about him, he's gone and scored two more at the weekend. He is just a bit of an animal. And he's, I think for me, it's between him, Bellingham and Mason Mount potentially. Although it's interesting to call Mason Mount a breakout star, because obviously he was a big name. I think it's more just the fact that he's elevated himself to an unbelievable level and become such a reliable midfielder within Thomas Tuchel, and the go-to man within Thomas Tuchel's system. When you consider like all the other players they got in, I mean, the fact that Saul has hardly even kicked a ball is kind of testament to Mason Mount's ability. If you consider that Saul came with that classic European paint of gold coat, gold paint, if that makes sense, of being like, oh, look, this guy's coming in from the continent, he's a big player. But Mason Mount just goes from strength to strength. However, for me, it's Vlahovic. I think Vlahovic, what he's done is pretty nuts. I'd like to see him.
I think Vlahovic might fit the criteria better, in that like he's gone from being like a virtual unknown, except to people like us, to being like linked with an 80 million euro move to like Man City or Arsenal or Spurs. Like, but I have reservations about him as a player at the moment. I think he's very good. I think he's going to be very good. But he's scored a lot of penalties. Like a third of his goals over the last like 18 months have been penalties. He's running really hot right now. And yes, like you deserve credit for finishing really well. But I would say that Bellingham and Mount are playing at a higher level than him at the moment. I mean, the reason I put Mount in the script is because I thought Mount was a good, promising player under Thomas Tuchel, under Frank Lampard. I thought there was loads of talent there, but I had reservations. He actually didn't get on the ball that much. For an attacking midfielder, he wasn't really like a passing hub in the way that we tend to see from players in his position. He wasn't creating very much. He wasn't passing into the box very much. And then as soon as Tuchel came in, all that shit got resolved. Like under Lampard, I think he was at about 0.4 XG a game. He's now close to 0.7 under Tuchel. He's got 18 goals and assists in 34 league appearances this year. He's a Champions League winner and obviously played a very key role in winning that Champions League. Yeah. And, you know, he's he's an amazing, Euros finalist, an amazing presser. I think he's in the top 8% of attacking mids and wingers for pressures a game. He's in the top 10% for progressive passes, top 20% for touches in the penalty area and progressive carries. And that is a really clear thing you can see under Tuchel. I actually went back and looked through his match logs. And last season, before Tuchel came in, he carried the ball forwards 12 times in 18 games, right? Afterwards, 26 times in 20 games.
Wow.
So you can see like a really stark difference there in the role he was playing. But also, I just think that Mount, to me, is... I guess KDB kind of started this, but Mount, I think, is like the next evolution of what the number 10 role is really going to be. Like, now, if you're a number 10, you can't be like a sort of, you know, Mesut Ozil, like drift around, play a great pass type. You've basically got to be fast enough to be a winger, defensive minded enough to be a centre mid, enough of a goal threat that you can like play off the striker. You've got to be able to do all this stuff. And when I look at people like Phil Foden and Emile Smith-Rowe, who are, I think, a little bit younger and a little bit, you know, not quite as far along in their journey, like in Foden's case, mostly because of competition at City, those guys are in the Mason Mount mold. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think he's almost having a defining year in like really setting our expectations of what we want from the number 10 position, and just has done it all at the top level. But I understand if people would say, well, actually his breakout year was the year before. It's just, to me, in the year where everyone was like, Mason Mount is like a world-class talent, I was like, Mason Mount's a very good talent. And now this year I'm like, no, Mason Mount is not a world-class, Mason Mount is not even just a world-class talent. He's now just a world-class player. It's that simple.
Well, yeah, I think for Mason, because in his first year under Lampard, it was, I understand what people mean if they said that was his breakout year, but I think that's just because people knew what his name was. Like, he was good, and I agree, he was good, especially in a side that had, you know, no transfer window, and he'd been playing Championship and Eredivisie football before that, to then step into the Premier League and look comfortable enough in your shoes. I think that was good. But yeah, this calendar year really has been a breakout season for him. Obviously, he has spent the majority of it under Tuchel, as you mentioned. And he's come on leaps and bounds. Like, it feels like he's double the player he was last season under, or his time under Frank Lampard, just by getting managed by Thomas Tuchel. And that's no discredit to Lampard, to be quite honest. I think it's just he works better in this set of formation. And I think under Lampard, he kind of just maybe certain, like with the way we were playing football, wasn't necessarily going through Mason. It was more so going through our you know, Jorginho and the wingers at the time, Willian, for instance. But he, this season, especially the last season, and now most recently, because he started off this campaign 2021-22 a little bit slow, actually. Maybe that was the England lag or whatever it may be, and he has really picked up over the past couple of games. And so, yeah, he's really come along. And I can see what you mean by kind of breaking out into that kind of one of the best players in the Premier League. And he's obviously, like, you wouldn't be wrong, I think, if you said that he's Chelsea's best player when he's on the pitch recently at all. And I can agree. I just don't know whether I would put it over Bellingham.
Yeah,
and like, the idea that, well, like, well, you were so impactful over the Champions League final as well at the age of 22. Like, it is crazy.
Well, let's see, because I think we've spent enough time on this. I think we've got a good idea of the candidates. Do we have a consensus call on this? Because I personally, having looked at it all, I'm pretty happy to go Bellingham, if everyone else is.
Yeah, I agree. Bellingham.
Cool.
Nice. Jude. Easy. Let's move on then to manager. Manager then. Because I think this is a really complicated one.
This is so hard. Yeah. Oh gosh!
Go on, Henry. Can you talk us through your difficulties when you've been selected a manager?
Right, it's not Pep. I think winning the League of City, obviously final. It's not for me.
Really?
It's not Nagelsmann. I'm thinking about this over the last 12 months as well. Bear in mind, I don't think Mancini winning the Euros of Italy is enough.
But when's the playoff for the qualification playoff thing for the World Cup?
It's coming. It'll be in a few. I think March time.
Okay, because that's an issue, isn't it?
So yeah,
really didn't wrap
over the last 12 months. Over the last 12 months, the candidates for me, I think, well, obviously what Conte did. Obviously, Conte did great to win it with Inter. I think David Moyes, personally, I think David Moyes to have led West Ham to fifth last season, to have got them into fourth at the moment, comfortably through the Europa League group stages. David Moyes could win it. I think Tuchel, what he did at Chelsea is pretty remarkable, and he's sort of kept that going as well. So those are top two. I think this is a bit niche, but like even Vincenzo Italiano, keeping Spezia up, taking Fiorentina to fifth in Serie A at the moment. That's an incredible achievement to do both of those things. Galtier to win Ligue 1. I mean, there are so... Even Gerrard to take Rangers unbeaten and to actually kick off a fairly solid season.
But you have
to
remember over 12 months.
I know.
Because half of is great.
I'm just saying the complexities of what we're talking about here. So in that case, I don't think Nagelsmann has done enough to be involved in the conversation. I don't think Pep's done above and beyond what we'd normally expect from him in many regards. So for me, it's between, I'd go for David Moyes or, oh, dare I say it, Thomas Tuchel. But I think Gautier as well, like what he's done with this Nice side is really impressive in the last six months. He's taken them really high. So Gautier, David Moyes or Thomas Tuchel, that's my three shortlists. So I'd be intrigued to see what you think there. But there's so many.
I'm not too far from that list. I personally would also add Pep Guardiola. I think people forget that by the end of 2020, City were doing well. They were quite far off the league. People were kind of saying, oh, they've mucked it up. They're not going to win it. And then 2021 comes along and Pep just gets them playing ridiculously, smashing. They go on some sort of ridiculous winning streak and obviously win the Premier League. They get to the final of the Champions League. Obviously lose to Chelsea. And then this year as well, like they're again right up there with the Premier League. Like they've been fantastic. But I guess if you're saying is that expected of City and Pep, then probably. But then I don't know, but as I said, it wasn't necessarily, people were kind of surprised a lot by the end of 2020. So I would also have him in there. But again, Tuchel I agree with. David Moyes I didn't actually think about, and he personally is the one that's swaying my vote. Yes. But then he was also good during 2020 as well.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. He got West Ham into a position and he kept them there, more or less. Yeah, everyone was going, they're going to fall. They're going to fall. And then the last 6 months have been incredible.
And this has been pointed out that, like, his Everton team, he was always built. I think Michael Cayley said this. Like, in his Everton team, he was always building around the lack of a world-class striker and the lack of a world-class DM. And don't get me wrong, like he's played a huge part in developing Antonio and Rice in those positions, but he does kind of have the perfect two players to fit those positions there. Like, I mean, but also, I mean, to me, I agree it's really hard. I would probably go Gaultier. I think winning Ligue 1 against PSG is such a phenomenal achievement. And then to change clubs in the summer and go to a team that finished ninth last year with a negative goal difference, and now they've got like, they finished last season with like a -3 goal difference. I think right now they've got like a +11 goal difference or something. They've gone from taking, I think like 1.3 points a game to like 1.7, which over the course of a season is like an 11 point difference. Like that is the difference between being mid-table and Champions League. Yeah. He's doing it with a side which is like quite young. And I just think like, you know, he left Lille not only with a title, but with so much added value in terms of the players he's developed. And now he's doing it at Nice. And just to see it so starkly, you know, for him to turn up at a club and then to go from being completely mediocre to one of the best sides in France. And I think actually right now they do have the best underlying numbers in France. Like that is a staggering achievement. It really, really is. And like how this guy has never been snapped up by a truly elite club is utterly beyond me. He's clearly an amazing coach. And, you know, I just think he deserves credit for what was a stonking performance this year against, you know, against Tuchel and then against Pochettino. Like, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Can I give a quick shout out to Ruben Amorim of Sporting? I
think. Yeah, great shout. Yeah, definitely.
What he's done is, like, people forget Sporting paid like 15 million euros for him from Braga, which I think at the time before Nagelsmann was the record buyout fee for a manager, and he's led them obviously to the first title in years. He's got them through a Champions League group stage with Borussia Dortmund. I feel really sorry for them that they had Juventus and now they've got City. I think that's a real kick in the teeth. And he's also, they're still kind of tied with FC Porto at the top of the Primera Liga again. So he is someone who's going to come eventually over to a big five league and he's going to tear it up. Ruben Amorim is an incredible coach, but I'm with you, Pat. I'm going to go for Gaultier on this, although David Moyes, I love him, and if he's listening, I was backing you. Okay,
it's a second. I think I can agree with you guys. I'll go Gaultier and give David Moyes a very close second for everything he's done with that West Ham side.
I think Moyes and Tuchel would have been easy consensus calls as well here. Like, absolutely deserve credit for like what have really been amazing performances, and in Moyes' case in particular, like just to really defy his critics is like, it's a pretty great story. You know, having kind of failed with West Ham really recently,
literally,
like to go back and be great there is amazing. What a redemption.
I have West Ham mates who, when I talked to them now and it's like, oh, when he came back, what were you thinking? They were like, dreadful, awful appointment. What were we doing? Like, why are we bringing him back? It went so bad. It didn't go great the first time. Why are we doing it again? And now they're like laughing.
I felt that way. I was just like, this didn't work like a year and a half ago. Why would it work now? And I think, you know, that's kind of fair enough. Like, it didn't work. And look, doing a great job.
It's such a weird club, West Ham. Like, even look at Manuel Pellegrini. He's now got Betis into third in La Liga. Not with a single standout player. So it is strange. But yeah, I think.
But the whole club, though, like their recruitment recently has been great. Like, they went from signing awful players like 3 years ago and overspending, spending way too much and kind of doing like the Everton model to now like being quite smart with their spending, like looking into positions that they actually need and upcoming talents and looking into the championship and spending really, really smartly. And obviously it's going well.
I just feel like they've got two scouts. I think they've got one championship scout and one Czech scout, and that's it. And all the players that they buy, like, are there. Like, what happened with Vlasic was probably, like, the Czech scout went on holiday to Russia. And they were like, Vlasic, in you get. But anyway, okay, I think that those are all completely fair shouts. So we'll go for Gaultier there. Should we move on to the most embarrassing moment of the year?
Yes.
There are so many of these.
I feel like we're probably actually missing some.
Oh, no, we're missing so many. Like, but I've got personal favourites here, but I really want to hear what you guys thought was really, truly cringy this year, because I thought it was a really strong year in cringe for football.
I'll kick it off. Like, I have a particular favourite of the Harry Kane trying to move to City.
Yes.
But in particular, the one story where, if you did research, it goes mental. Where Harry Kane and his brother is obviously his agent, and it was the Sun that broke the story that it's done. He's moving to Manchester City. His brother said at a wedding that it was confirmed, right? And then when you digged into the story, you found out that the person that had written the article was a friend of Harry Kane's brother. I think it's
Charlie.
Yes. Kane. And that Charlie she Kane. Had also, there are pictures of them together, and that she had gone to the wedding with Charlie, obviously been invited to Charlie's wedding, and that he said this story at his wedding and then gone and allowed her to put it on the Sun, even though they are good mates. Where obviously it's just something behind the scenes where Charlie's been like, oh, can you write up this story so we can try and push Spurs' hand to go and do this deal? And then overall, nothing happened. Spurs, Harry Kane stays at Tottenham, and he scored one Premier League goal since. It's like so funny. Aww.
It's such a lesson in like not hiring members of your family to do an incredibly complicated and specialist job. Like, I mean, like Jack Grealish had an agreement with his club and an agreement in his contract, and the clause was paid and he got the move. Harry Kane had a gentleman's agreement, supposedly, with Daniel Levy.
Nothing.
Yeah, and his brother, like, posturing all over the back pages of the tabloids, and he didn't get his move. What does that tell you? Like, as much as, like, we say, oh, Jorge Mendes, like, seems like a dick. Mino Raiola is clearly a dick. Like, I don't really like these people. They are good at what they do. Like, they're good at representing their clients' interests. And, like,
there's a reason why they have so many of the superstars, right? Like,
yes. Yeah, they get them paid. Right. They get them the moves they want, and they get them paid. And in this case, Charlie Kane is like bowling around at a wedding, like singing like Return of the Mac, and then in between it, like telling a reporter from The Sun that Harry's off to City. Absolutely moronic.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, all right. Well, listen, I was thinking before, I don't know if you saw Andreas Pereira's slip in the Copa Libertadores final the other day, which lost Flamengo the match in the last minute, something like that. It was a classic Gerrard slip. Andreas Pereira, that was quite bad. But yeah, I think the Champions League draw the other day is just honestly one of the funniest things ever. It was like a bunch of old men who'd never used a computer before trying to figure out like a system. It was genuinely embarrassing. I mean, we even saw it in the chat, like in real time, going, what on earth are these guys doing? I mean, the fact that they've had to redo the Champions League draw, when it's 8 ties, that's all they had to produce. 8 ties with a couple of rules to prohibit a few teams against each other. That is unreal. But, I mean, for me, it has to be the Super League. It literally has to be the Super League.
Yeah.
That'd be really fun.
That was so... I think because it was such a flash-in-the-pan moment, it's almost been forgotten how mental that was. What happened? That they all did that stupid press release. They all withdrew. And then everyone just sort of up in arms. Saw a great social movement. It's almost tragic
so funny
that this kind of social movement happened over a Super League when... there yes. are so many other issues in the world. That's I think yeah. that actually plays into the embarrassment of the whole situation, is that the world, like, literally people united against this in a way that I've hardly seen on other situations. Yeah. I guess there's no, like, policing or other kind of literal laws you're going up against. But yeah, I think you can't. It is forgotten how crazy the Super League was and what
it was like. 5 days, wasn't it?
Yeah, how quickly it was over was so funny. But you're totally right. Like, how, like, the fact that there were, like, commentators before matches who were doing, like, 5 minute, like, Shakespearean speeches about, like, how the Super League is everything that's wrong with football. And I was like, no, you just know that your job will be, like, in danger if the Super League happens. Shut up. And then genuinely, like, 2 days later, Arsenal being like, oh, whoops, sorry. That was actually a really stupid idea.
If you think back to it as well, like, it happened on that game. It was Chelsea versus someone at the Bridge. And I remember I was playing five-a-side, and I went and started five-a-side. The Super League is happening. You know, Chelsea about to kick off their game. I finish a 40-minute match. Chelsea still haven't kicked off because they've delayed their game because of the fans outside. All the clubs have pulled out within the space of half an hour, and the game gets ahead. And it's just like, there were so many fans outside. I think it's the only time fan involvement has actually done anything in football.
Yeah.
When I think, realistically.
There must be other times.
Off the top of my head, it feels, or maybe it's just the most recent, but...
I can't imagine the other times were good. To be honest,
but even the other bits as well, that's so funny, is like Florentino Perez still being like, oh, we're going to rethink the Super League and we're going to try and do it again with another idea. And then they're going to the other team, they're like Premier League teams, well, you guys have committed to this, you can't just pull out, you have to pay a sum now to get out of this, and that money just ends up becoming then Real Madrid, Barcelona's, and these guys that need the cash at the moment. Like, there's just
Shut up.
It's like a sketch. It's like a sketch in Always Sunny. Honestly, it feels like Charlie D, Mac, and Dennis have, like, made the Super League or whatever, and
the gang invents the Super League. Yeah. Like, yeah, the idea that, like, Florentino Perez, like, he's seen Chelsea and Man City just, like, face down UEFA and say, no, we're going to do what we want. Like, we don't care. You've got no power over us. And yet Florentino Perez thinks that he's going to stand there with, like, go into the bank with an IOU, get some money out, use it to hire a lawyer, and then that lawyer is going to go round City's house and just, like, slap them with a lawsuit. And suddenly everyone will be like, sorry, guys, I guess that this is the least popular thing that's ever been floated in football, but we're going to go and join the Super League. What an idiot.
And then for them to then go bid 200 million the next summer for one player with... That's an embarrassing thing. That's embarrassing. Bidding 200 million for a player with 12 months left on his contract and still getting rejected. That is embarrassing.
There are so many of these. Like, shall I rattle through some of the other...
Yeah, go on.
The other embarrassing moments. Guys, give me a mark out of 10 for how embarrassing these are. Obviously, 10 being the most embarrassing. So... the Saudi royal family passing the fit and proper owners test and being allowed to buy Newcastle.
It's 10 out of 10.
It's up there.
10 out of 10. Completely agree. Absolutely because ridiculous.
Because they couldn't, because also they didn't pass it, but then beIN Sports were like, oh, now we'll allow you to do it. And suddenly the Premier League was like, oh my God, you're fine. You're absolutely fine now because we can show your games.
Turns out it's totally fine. One that I've just thought of, which is not like a major, like a large scale embarrassment, but you remember, do you remember the footage of that amazing goal Mikel Antonio scored for Jamaica and then his teammate following it up and trying to boot the ball into the and just falling over. It's so good. I love that.
That's good.
What would you give that? What are you giving that, Henry? Like a three?
Maybe like a four or five. But yeah, all right. To be fair, Jamaican football never seen such a thunder strike. So yeah, I'm not surprised.
Spurs interviewing 7 managers and then sacking their 4th choice after 3 months just so they could hire their first choice who'd previously turned them down because they didn't give him enough money.
Oh, creme de la creme. That is, I think 8.5, close to a 9.
Strong.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah,
The thing that tempers it, though, is they did end up with Antonio Conte.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, like, the annoying thing that it did work out for them, but that is humiliating. And then the last one, and I've got to say, this is my personal favourite. Eric Abidal apologising to his wife on Instagram after what I can only presume was infidelity. I'm going to read this verbatim because it's too good. He says, Hayat Abidal, forgive me. Whatever your decision, you will remain in my eyes the woman of my life and especially the mother of our wonderful children. I deserve this humiliation, even if it kills me alive. Alhamdulillah, and inshallah, one day you will forgive me.
Oh, my oh, 10 out of 10. That, 10 yeah, out of 10. I just love the line, especially the mother of our wonderful children. Like, she can change that. She can't change. Like, she's always going to be the mother, no matter what, Eric.
Yeah, he's like,
she's never going to change.
Whatever your decision, you'll always remain. As if she was worried that if she like said, no, I don't want to be married to you anymore, he'd be like, well
I've taken the kids.
Like, you're not the mother of my children anymore. It's like, he's had a real
fall from grace, hasn't he? Because he was obviously the director sporting director at Barcelona for a bit. Obviously, fell out of Messi, but yeah, that's
terrible
bad.
Time.
But I swear, Icardi recently had the same kind of situation.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Yeah.
With his sort of headline grabbing wife as well. They've both been who's also his agent. Following each other. Yeah, and you know, claims of infidelity via Instagram. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and he was like, we're back together, and she was like, no, we're not. And like, it was just going backwards and forwards. And also, she like genuinely ruins his career every like season and a half. Yeah. Because she, like Charlie Kane, has literally no idea what she's doing.
Considering she was also Maxi like Lopez's Rabiot's partner, mom,
who's also
not dude. Back in the day.
Sorry,
considering she was also Maxi Lopez's partner as well back in the day. That whole storyline of Icardi and Wanda is basically a Kim Kardashian series waiting to happen.
I might be inventing this because it's funny, but I swear like Mauro Icardi has tattoos of the faces of Maxi Lopez's kids.
Yes, he does.
I mean, look, on the one hand, that's good. I like to see that, like a committed stepdad. But on the other hand, it is very funny because Wanda Nara is clearly a lunatic and I assume Mauro Icardi is as well.
Mauro definitely is.
Can I just, anyone listening, if there are more embarrassing moments, can you get them in the comments below? Because I just want to remember them.
I feel like we're missing a lot in 2021.
We've really needed it this season. So look, I mean, there are a lot of contenders here, but I think from the ones we've talked about, it's hard to look past the Super League. It's just so dumb.
Completely agree.
Consensus call. Okay, perfect. Let's move on then to, let's do signing next, because the one after that I think is going to be a bit more contentious. So let's do a quick one on signing, because I actually found this pretty hard. Yep. There weren't that many signings that I was like, they've just blown my socks off.
I'll kick off on this one. I think across the last 12 months, it's either between the suggestion you've put, Sebastian Haller to Ajax, or I think it's Tomori to AC Milan. I mean, that's my bet, personally. Obviously,
12 months.
What Haller has done with Ajax, don't get me wrong, is really impressive, but dare I say it, he was taking a slight step down from the Premier League.
Yes,
I never quite understand what was so horrific about him in the Premier League. He really was fine. I mean, I think another season at West Ham, he could have been pretty excellent. But anyway, to credit where credit's due, his performances in the Champions League this season have been pretty remarkable. Ajax in general have been remarkable. They're obviously in like another golden generation, as it were. Probably the last one we'll see, certainly under Ten Hag. Hull has been pretty cool. But I just think Tomori, to have been effectively written off by Chelsea under Lampard, to go to AC Milan and immediately get into that starting 11 next to Kier, kick out Romagnoli, and then to stay there. AC Milan, okay, they were pretty poor in the Champions League this season, but it does look like the Scudetto is well and truly on for them this term. And that's just an awesome achievement. I think he's silenced his doubters. I'm amazed that he's not involved in sort of the England conversation more. I know he was brought back recently, but I think for the price they paid, for about 26 million, to get a sort of 7.5, 8 out of 10 centre-half, I think is incredible. For me, it's Tomori to AC Milan, but I can see the argument for Haller as well.
I think that Tomori shout's a really, really good one. Like, I mean, I can totally see why Chelsea sold him, though I think it might look a little bit silly next summer if they don't sign some of their players to new contracts. But like, yeah, the Haller thing, it's just like 46 goal involvements in 45 games. Like, even in the Eredivisie, that is crazy. Yeah. And like, I understand, you know, like it is a step down league-wise, but team-wise, I genuinely think, I saw, you know, there was that like thing going around Twitter that was like, I think it was like somebody slipping and falling at like the Inter Stadium, and it was like, oh, when you go from Ajax to Liverpool in the Champions League draw.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
I was like, let's have it right. Ajax are way better than Inter. Like, Ajax are so, I think Ajax are like the only teams in the Champions League that I'm absolutely certain are better than Ajax are the Premier League Big Three and Bayern. Like, I think Ajax are really, really good. They're like, what, the ninth team in the history of the Champions League to win all their group stage games. They had the fourth best group stage ever, like when you factor in goal difference as well. And I mean, Haller scored 10 goals in six games. I actually looked this up. After one campaign in the Champions League, six games in the Champions League, Sebastian Haller has scored as many Champions League goals as Kevin De Bruyne and one more than Eden Hazard.
Wow.
That is crazy. That is crazy.
Well, he broke Haaland's record that he set previously about scoring most amount of goals in the quickest player to 10 goals in the Champions League. They beat Dortmund 4-0. A Dortmund side that we rave about quite often as well, right?
They beat Dortmund home and away.
Like 7-1 on aggregate. I'm really
and Haller in 45 games he's played for Ajax this season, he's lost three of them. And one of them was in like the Dutch Community Shield. Like, that's it. He's lost three games this season. It's absolutely ridiculous. And yes, I mean, look, Ajax are a great team. They're in a weak league. But in the Champions League as well, you know, won a domestic double. Like, I give him credit for that. But, like, to be honest with you, like, the other names in here, like, I put down Conor Gallagher, but I, you know, obviously got relegated. Like, it's really difficult to find somebody who I think had just an amazing whole year.
Again, this one's more, I guess, of recency because of when the league started again. But Emmanuel Dennis.
Emmanuel Dennis.
I think he's been elite. Obviously, when you score a hat-trick against Real Madrid in the Champions League, all eyes are on you. And I was surprised in the end, actually, Watford was the team that he went to. He's now got the second most goal contributions in the league, in the Premier League, just behind Mohamed Salah. And I personally think whatever happens to Watford, whether they stay up or they go down, like he's got potential to be moving to the next level of a Premier League club easily. He excites me so much, man. Like, I think he's such a fun player to watch.
I agree with you, Zach.
He's been huge. Go on.
But this did come out of literally nowhere, this success. He scored 19 goals in 85 league games to Club Brugge. He went on loan to FC Köln for the second half of last year and didn't score once.
Add to the magic?
He was riddled with like issues in terms of he would only sit on certain seats on the bus, and apparently it was just like nauseating for the rest of the German teams going, what is going on with this bloke? But for them to come to Watford and achieve what he's done, don't get me wrong, remarkable, but across the year, he has not been a better signing than either Tomori or Sebastian Haller.
But I would agree to
More than Tomori?
Zach, Tomori's a starter for a team that's competing for Serie A. There are guys like Romagnoli. Like, Romagnoli's obviously had injuries a lot this season, but like Tomori has taken the place of like really highly rated defenders.
Okay. Look. For bottom line, doesn't matter. Haller is the signing of the year. Bottom line.
Okay. Well, decision made. Zach just doesn't want to talk about Chelsea mistakes anymore. That's all it is.
No. I will happily talk about tomorrow. Like, I will happily talk about tomorrow as being a mistake. No. But it is what
I'm amazed you call him by his surname. Normally, when we're talking about Chelsea players, like Thick. It's first name all the way.
I
do that with everyone.
Zach, I can see you and Pat Nevin sat in Porto just slagging off Tomori over a nice bottle of wine.
Mate, Pat, we weren't talking about that. Pat's got some great stories, mate. That's a whole other podcast in itself, maybe. Fantastic stories.
This makes me uneasy. I think we need to move. Let's move on from this one very, very quickly. Then.
Well, who are we going for? Have we agreed on Haller?
Agreeing on Haller.
Definitely.
Okay. All right, Haller. Right, good one. Nice redemption story for him as well. Let's move on then to underachiever. I want to kick this one off.
Go on.
I've got Mikel Arteta. He's just not doing a good job. That's it. Like, it's not a terrible job. You know, like, Arsenal fans are going to go on and on and on regardless of who's in charge. But, like, Arsenal are... Well, I'll get to that in a minute. He's now signed 13 players at a cost of £165 million, which actually isn't that much, I suppose, for 13 players, but it is a lot of money. His Premier League record in 2021, not terrible. I looked it up, played 38 now, won 20, drawn 7, lost 11. So that's 67 points, which over the course of a season could be enough for a top four in a bad year. But the losses have been dire. The attack is terrible. When Arsenal play badly, they look like championship level, and their talent should not really have them looking like that. Like when you think about what people like Thomas Frank or like Graham Potter have done with inferior sides, like I don't really understand it. I mean, but really the worst thing to me by far is that we're embarrassingly boring. We're so boring. Like under Wenger, even in the later years when we would have like our problems, we were still a great attacking side and we were fun to watch. But now when other teams play us, they're probably bored out of their minds because we're just so dull. We've had under 50% possession this season. We're having more shots than last year. Shot numbers are actually pretty decent, but we don't press. We press less than any side in the Premier League, apparently. In the summer, you know, if you want to talk about embarrassing moments, like going and spending £50 million on Ben White in the summer, who I like, he's a good player, but Arsenal had Saliba, who is having a great season on loan. And are you really telling me that Arsenal couldn't have spent £50 million better when they've got an incredibly thin midfield and two incredibly old strikers? Like, it just seems silly to me. And then you look at other transfers, you know, like Aubameyang, rather, was a contract that Arteta handed out, and Arteta got so much credit for signing him up to that new three-year deal. And don't get me wrong, it's been worse than I think even I and other people who criticised the deal expected. But it's been really bad, and he's still a disciplinary issue. At 32, it's embarrassing. Cedric Suarez and Pablo Mari were guys that Arteta brought in specifically. He brought them in on loan, then he decided to sign them permanently. Now they don't play at all. Brought in Willian, gone after a year. Like, he's basically been bailed out by the fact that a couple of young kids have been amazing for him. But even Partey has been so much worse under Arteta than he was under Simeone. And, you know, like, there are reasons behind that. But I just look at this team and I think, what is Arsenal good at? Like, what are we good at? Are we a good possession side? Not particularly. Are we a good pressing side? Definitely not. Do we play a good deep block defence? No. Do we play at a high speed? No. Are we fun to watch? No. Like, do we spend money really wisely? No. Like, I just look at Arsenal and I just think we're just a nothing side. And one of the reasons that I kind of think, oh, it would be really good to bring in like a Potter or a Ten Hag or something, is because I think they're actually distinctive. Like, if you could replace all of like, all of even like Southampton's players with just like faceless grey men, you could kind of tell which team you were watching because of the way they play. You certainly could with a team like Liverpool, not just because they're good, but because of how they play. Whereas with Arsenal, I think if you just replaced Arsenal's players with like faceless grey men, I'd be like, this is exactly the same as watching Arsenal normally. Like, we're just fucking boring. Like, it's just tedious. And so I just think like there's so much talent in this squad. It's just like mediocre and dull. And fundamentally, when I watch football, I'm giving up some of my free time to do it. I'm giving up time with like, you know, my wife. I'm giving up time with my baby. Not really, because it's in the evening normally. But, you know, I'm giving up time that you're giving up free time that you could be doing something else. And when it isn't entertaining, then you do think at the end, like, why did I even watch this? Like, yeah, it wasn't like, if we played, at least under Wenger, when we often played well and lost, I would take that over playing as badly as we do and winning, because I don't actually watch football because I think I'm entitled to watch Arsenal win trophies. I watch football because I want to be entertained.
I get it. And it's just this kind of, I guess, long way that Arsenal do keep going down under Arteta. Like, it's funny, I find, because one game, what was the game where suddenly you were pressing loads the first 20 minutes?
Oh, we do that every like three or four games, and then the next game we're just like on the deck chairs doing absolutely fucking nothing. Like, it's so weird.
I think that Liverpool game where they just rolled you over was quite an eye opener, because I think Arsenal had built up a bit of momentum. But I mean, the only way I disagree with you is a little bit is that Arsenal are in an amusing way poised to at least challenge for Champions League football this season. If they can rectify something in the January window. I understand what you mean. There's just sort of like a meekness to this Arsenal side, and just a bit pathetic something about them. But they're still, I still think if you look at the general strength of the league, they are in a position where they can sort of hit some of their targets this term. I'll just caveat this with my argument, which was Spurs, who I think over the last 12 months, it's just been almost an entire crumbling of everything they built under Pochettino in terms of getting to a new stadium, becoming a Champions League regular, reaching the final. We saw them under Mourinho bring back Bale ahead of the previous season. They were top of the league by November the 30th and only out of the top four by about Christmas. Since then, it's just been an absolute disaster. Mourinho gone, Ryan Mason gone. As we mentioned earlier, the hiring process for Nuno, disastrous. He's now gone. Obviously, Ryan Mason, I know he's still behind the scenes, etc. But yeah, Nuno gone as well. Conte's come in. They lost the League Cup final in a frankly pathetic performance as well.
I still don't understand that, Henry. Like sacking Mourinho, like just before he got to take charge in the final he'd got them to, is so weird.
Yeah, it's just completely illogical. I think there's probably some money clause, no doubt. Qualified for the Conference League. They haven't even got through their group stage by the looks of that. After not even being allowed to play the last game against Rennes. And they lost to the lowest ranked side in the third tier of European competition in Slovenia against Mura. Did you see the disdain on Conte's face? He was like, I can't believe... It was almost as if he was going, I cannot believe what I've signed up for. I've been completely sold down a river by Paratici. They are a bizarre club at the moment. Players, I don't know where the dynamic is. I think their last 12 months is just a real pity. Obviously, they are slightly winning games at the moment, but that's basically because they've got, in sort of Højbjerg and Son, they've got a slightly solid core who can at least sort of dig them out of situations. Kane can't even score for them. He tried to leave with them in the summer. I think if you look at underachievers, that is, for me, that's the... that's their last 12 months has just been abysmal. So I'd personally give it to Spurs. But I understand your Arsenal frustration. I wonder who Zach ultimately picks as a result.
I've got a mix of two. It's Lionel Messi in Barcelona.
Wow.
Obviously, we've spoken for years about Barcelona wow. and how they're kind of going downhill and everything. And then we had the year before where Messi wanted to leave. And it looked like it was going to happen, and then suddenly it didn't happen. Even though he had this gentleman's agreement, shock horror, they're not a real thing. It didn't work, and he had to stay for Barcelona for another year. And then it was that he wanted to stay at Barca. He didn't want to sign a new contract, and Barca just couldn't afford to do it. And this mess that is Barcelona Football Club. Since Messi's left, it's got even worse. They can't afford to do anything. They're talking about selling Frankie de Jong. They sat their manager, brought back Xavi. Xavi's coming out and going, I didn't realise it was this bad. Laporte took over as the president. He's come out and said, I didn't realise it was this bad. Like, it is an absolute show over at Barcelona. I'm less concerned about Messi's move to PSG. Like, he has underachieved a little bit in the league, but he's got 5 goals in the Champions League. It's not terrible. But I think, yeah, Barcelona for 2021 have been huge underachievers and less underachiever, more just they could have gone in the embarrassing section, to be quite honest. Yeah, actually,
I was going
to
say, Zach, they're not an underachiever. They're just like disaster of 2021. We just put up Barcelona. Like
it's not like they've like done a bunch of stuff and then underachieved. Mm. It's like they literally can't do anything because they've spent all the money that they had and that they borrowed, and they're idiots. Like, I mean, yeah, I don't know. But Barca are probably like one of the biggest fuck-ups of the last 10 years.
Can we give them worst club of the year?
Yes. Yeah. All sure. Right. Yeah. That's absolutely fine. Yeah, I think they definitely deserve that. I mean, other strong contenders do include like Man United, for example. I mean, Barca have gone from having maybe the greatest 11 of all time and winning the Champions League to being an absolute joke who could end up in the Conference League
in 10 years. Jesus,
it's actually good great God. You know what, that is a feel-good story, and that moves us on nicely.
Well, who's the underachiever?
Oh yeah, Zach, who's your choice then for underachiever, because you've just like muddied the waters by throwing in Barca.
Yeah, sorry. No. I'll go
Spurs
with
Arsenal.
I'll go with Spurs.
Yes,
I think that's fair,
because they were at high heights and have dropped off more than Arsenal.
Yeah, they've gone from being in the Champions League spots or just out of the Champions League spots with the best player in the country to being like mid-table with an old man up front who can't do anything. Like, that is pretty bleak. All right, well, let's move on to feel-good moment of the year then, because I thought it'd be nice to end on a positive note. And I thought there were some good things in here. Like, I mean, That said, I found it harder when I started thinking about it than I meant to. But I thought that Lukaku's move back to Chelsea was a real heart warmer. That video that Anderlecht produced of him.
Yeah,
like,
that was cute.
I found that really touching, and I just like love Lukaku. I thought Simon Kjær, his role in basically saving Christian Eriksen's life, and the way that people reacted to that event, you know, like once we knew that Eriksen was going to be okay, I know that Eriksen himself was like, I remember him recording a message for a little girl who was going to have like a heart device put in, and you know, I think it was Belgium kicked the ball out in one of their games, like so that the whole crowd could like applaud Christian Eriksen.
Even the Danish squad as well, surrounding him, like make sure the cameras can't get onto it. That was that was really good from them as well, I thought.
And it was just like one of those things that I genuinely just turned on the match to see what was like going on, like, I mean, in the game. And about after I'd been watching for about a minute, that was when Eriksen collapsed.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you guys felt, but then like for the rest of the day, I was like very stressed out about it, and checking it again. It was just like a really horrible moment.
Massively. I mean, since then as well, like, that created a great push towards having defibrillators. Around. Obviously there's loads in Premier League stadiums, and since then we've seen fans collapsing and stuff like that, but thankfully they've all been okay. But also pushing them towards non-league grounds and Sunday league pitches as well, so in case that kind of stuff happens, because it's crazy, man. It's crazy that like that this stuff is happening, and before we just didn't have the things around to kind of save someone's life. I think that is probably, for me, that is probably what takes it. But I do have a personal one.
Give us your ones, guys.
I would put Tuchel in there. Less so from a Chelsea perspective. No. I would put less so from a Chelsea perspective, and from obviously himself going from PSG, where he's lost the final, been sacked, or whatever. And then obviously he won the Champions League final of Chelsea, and there was this really lovely, lovely moment that I don't know if the camera's caught, but I remember seeing it.
I don't know if the cameras caught it, but I saw it because I was there.
No, I don't mean that. Awful. But he obviously hadn't seen his children in 6 months. They were still in Paris. He was in London. And it's really, really adorable where he did this like double take when he saw his kids running over to him that he didn't realise at first. Like, oh my God, like they're on the pitch celebrating this moment. And then when I was at the after party, again, I don't mean it like that. But there was like this thing where everyone was singing "We Are the Champions," whatever, which is nice. But in the corner, there's just one guy there holding their kid, and it was just Thomas Tuchel, and like it was a nice moment where I was like, "Oh, that's quite sweet."
So Thomas Tuchel is good dad. That's what we've.
That is sweet, but like literally nobody cares. So Henry, give me yours, so that we can wrap this shit up before Zach starts talking about Chelsea.
You know, I've got a ton of great moments at my seat. Listen, this is another one. I want to hear in the comments below some other ideas about what moments, because we're definitely going to miss loads. I think Brentford's first win against Arsenal, opening game of the season, afterwards. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
Brand new stadium. First game back in the Premier League, Thomas Frank, the whole story. I thought that was really cool. It was like a beautiful evening. Rolled over Arsenal. Love to see it. I thought about maybe when Goran Pandev qualified Macedonia for the Euros and scored their first goal, but I watched his celebration back and I didn't get enough emotion from it. It was six out of ten. Yeah, it was a bit of a too generic fist pump. I wanted to see a bit more, kind of the crowd's gone wild. So I've had to write off Pandev, although he's one of my men of the year, it must be said. I don't know if you guys saw, but when Maxi Rodriguez retired earlier in last month,
I saw
Newell's old boys literally had like a full-on firework display mid-game for him. I thought that was really cool. Just
Messi's winning with Argentina.
Yeah. It was nuts. Sick. Like the game just paused and they just had a giant firework display and he got subbed off and it was all quite emotional. That was great. Betis throwing toys on the pitch literally last weekend.
Oh, that's always good.
That's amazing.
They do it every year.
It gets bigger and better, 19,000. And my favourite, which Pat is going to be rolling his eyes at, is the video on BBC Breakfast of Tim Ream greeting a cerebral palsy Fulham fan who plays in goal, I think, for the England cerebral palsy team or something like that. And he's literally overwhelmed at meeting his hero. And like, it doesn't matter who, it doesn't matter who you are, who you support, whatever. I think when footballers actually use their power for good, that's quite cool. And it was just to see this guy. Tim Ream's actually very well spoken as well, which helps. And the whole situation was just pretty. You know, even Gary Lineker tweeted about how nice it was. But for me, it's probably between. Yeah, for me, it's probably between Brentford's opening game and Simon Kjær, and I'm obviously going to give it to Simon Kjær because I completely agree.
Yeah, definitely
with everything
Simon
you guys
Kjær.
Said,
and the whole and yeah. the whole Danish team for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that's a nice, easy one, and that way we don't have to get into Tim Ream, because it's not that I don't, what? You know, it's not that I don't admire what Tim Ream did. It's just that, you know, it's Tim Ream, so it's not really a football story. It's only, you know, it's tangentially a football story, right?
Tangentially. Whatever.
You've had a good feel. You've had a good feel.
The Beckenbauer of the championship.
You've had a good feel good moment this year, Pat. You had a kid.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, like, it's not really a football story, is it?
Oh, it is.
Until she's playing up front for Arsenal ladies and the Netherlands national team, like Viviana Miedema, like then it'll be a football story. But for now, it's like. You're all very welcome that I've actually created the best person who's ever lived. She is legit the best person I've ever met in my life. She's sick. Wow. But anyway, good thing we ended on that feel-good moment. Eh? thanks for joining me today, guys. Is there anything, Henry, that you'd like to plug before we say goodbye?
Oh, no, this was really fun. I really enjoyed this, especially the section on just embarrassing moments. That was great. I would like to plug... just the French hooligan EFD video. If people haven't watched that already,
yeah,
really enjoyed it writing that, and it's been really well received. So go check out that if you haven't already.
Yeah, huge plaudits from all over the place for that incredible video. What about you, Zach? What have you got to plug?
Us. Come say hello to us on social media. Come follow us. All that good stuff. I'm sure our handles are on screen or in the description below. And have a lovely rest of the year, fellas. Or women watching, everyone and everyone.
Yes, definitely have a lovely rest of the year, whoever's watching. Thank you very much for watching this year or listening. And make sure that you subscribe using your favourite podcast app or subscribe at Football Daily Podcast on YouTube. It's been great to have you with us for the journey in what has been a very odd year for football. And we'll catch you next time. Bye.